All right, I am very happy to be joined right now by Chris Preston. He's a partner and chief creative officer at Preston Spire. That is a very successful Minneapolis-based advertising agency, one of the best around that you will find. Chris has been at this for 40 years. I'm sure he doesn't love me saying that, I'm sure, but that gives you an idea of how long he's been at this and what kind of expertise he brings to our discussion today about Super Bowl ads and kind of not just what you saw Sunday, but some of the history of it as well. Chris, welcome. How you doing?
Thanks, Michael. Doing great this morning. It's the Super Bowl of advertising, as they say. So excited. We just had a great all-agency meeting here at Preston Spire and talked about the Super Bowl advertising of last night. So it's a big deal in our world.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, it's not just the game. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, I would guess, like, you know, you hear people say, hey, I'm just watching for the ads. Not everybody who watches the Super Bowl is super into football. People want to see the halftime show. People want to see the new ads that are coming out. And that's a reason to stay with the game, even if it's not close. And obviously, Sunday's was a good competitive game. But even on a blowout, you're going to stick around for, you know, some of these new spots. So I want to get into some of the history in a little bit. But I'd love to just ask you right off the jump, what did you see that you especially liked Sunday night from whatever brands were putting forth their best effort?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think it's a very subjective one. So bear sure. with me. You know, keep in mind that I'm a creative director, not a brand manager or somebody who's all about the numbers and the way that they move the scale. But we sent out a survey to our creative department last night, and in various stages of inebriation, I got a bunch of great responses from people. But I'd say, you know, as a cynical ad guy, I'm not supposed to get touched by marketing, but that the Farmer's Dog pet food brand, which I wasn't aware of actually before the Super Bowl, was very touching for me. I actually got choked up. Maybe because I had a chocolate lab as my last dog, who died 11 years ago. But that touching emotional connection, I think, is really the way that a brand wins in the Super Bowl like this. And probably the opposite end of that scale, I would say the Tubi rabbit hole spot was weird. Not just for weird sake, but with the consumer, I thought they had an insight of that joy of going down the rabbit hole on a streaming service. They captured that in an odd way, throwing people down the rabbit hole. And then their gag that they did where it looked like somebody sat on the remote control. I don't know if you noticed that spot, Michael.
But oh, yeah.
Okay. It was, you know, my wife said, what are you doing when that went? Because I typically put my foot on the remote or
right.
So I think that was a good interruption. I did have two of the women in our department say they felt people would be annoyed by that. And so they did not like that. But I found it effective.
I noticed that right away. I thought I could tell that it was a spot, that it was something was different from my screen, even though they brought back the two announcers. It was like they were coming back from a commercial break. So it was a good setup. I guess maybe I wasn't fooled. Luckily, I wasn't like, and my 3-year-old son did turn off the TV at one point. I was like, what are you doing? Like that was real. That was real. Not the Tubi spot. And the dog commercial that you referenced, that one got me too. Cause we're actually in the process of maybe getting a dog right now. And I've been thinking about, my oldest daughter is 8. I've been thinking about like, wow, like this dog could be part of her life, until she goes off to college, things like that. I'm like, wow, like that's a long time. So that got me right here in the heart too, as I was kind of thinking and watching that one. Your agency prides itself on kind of the concept of good wins. And I imagine the Super Bowl, there's no more kind of pressure to deliver that. How does that kind of get magnified when, you're talking about $6-7 million for a 30-second spot where you've got to kind of capture someone's attention. And if you fail, it's the opposite, right?
Yeah, well, good wins and the thinking behind good wins at our agency is that, work has to be really welcome in people's lives. If you're going to do it, there's too many ways to avoid advertising now if people don't like what you're telling them. And so that goes double for the Super Bowl, I think. I really do, where, you know, your ad might literally appear at a party. So you want to be invited to the party. You want to be welcome at the party. You got to be entertaining. You can't wear your marketing on your sleeve. You have to be welcome in their lives and touch them in a way that, you know, an amazing, you know, pass play downfield does, or, you know, they're sitting in front of a plate of nachos. They don't want to hear your marketing spiel. They want to be entertained. It has to be relevant to society right now. Timing is all important. A lot of things have to go right for, especially these days, for a Super Bowl spot to succeed.
No, I would imagine that's true. And, you know, I guess the flip side of that is, were there offerings Sunday that you thought maybe missed the mark, but not necessarily, didn't have to be like complete flops or failures, but just ones that you were like, that one didn't get me the way that I think they wanted it to get me?
Yeah, you know, I've got a few. I thought the beer marketing in general was, which is usually a top category for me, was a weak category this year. And I did like Bud Light.
I thought
the On Hold was a Human Truth, and the couple, Miles Teller was and his wife were very charming together, very authentic. But I felt like, and I don't know if this is universal or not, a couple people in my department did not like it, but I found the Miller Coors Light versus Miller Light bar fight, where Blue Moon comes in at the end, and it's like, some people here didn't know that Miller Coors owned all three brands. They thought, what? It just felt like a big mess. And I think it was a big who cares. And I think consumers will say who cares at the end of that spot as well. So that was a miss for me. I know women are 40% of the Super Bowl audience. So it's fabulous to have, brands that appeal to women, make a big splash. The NFL, I thought, nailed it with their flag football spot. I thought that was very effective and good. But the worst in my mind was the Temu Shop Like a Billionaire.
Yeah, that's strange.
Song. It's, you know, disposable fashion is, I don't know, maybe that's a personal dislike of mine, I don't care for disposable fashion, but, you know, I don't know how many billionaires are buying $4.99 blouses on an app.
Sure.
it felt like a miss, and I double checked with the women in our agency, and it was hate it was seemed to be the universal team. Not to be mean, it's not easy. And then I found the Michelob Caddyshack ad to be a miss, and I found it soulless. I felt like it was an attempt, and I thought a somewhat cynical attempt to capture nostalgia. It's obviously a beloved movie,
right?
Respect with, you know, anybody who likes sports or
sure.
golf, and you know, just hilarious. But replacing like world class comedians with world-class athletes in a comedy situation just felt like a miss to me. And I love Serena Williams, but she's not a comedian. You know, she just isn't. And I would have rather seen, you know, Bill Murray or I guess I can't see Ted Knight or Rodney Dangerfield now, but maybe I would have rather seen the dead guys than right. just see
holograms. You know,
exactly. People trying to be funny that aren't. So that felt like a miss. And then I guess I would say the DraftKings, you know, in your neck of the woods with the sports, betting
right.
and so forth. I felt like that was a huge waste of star talent with Kevin Hart, who I really like, with Big Poppy, with Ludacris, and then Hawk, it was just bad wordplay. Tony Hawk, is an amazing athlete, and they just use him as a dumb, you know, word gag. Just felt like unredeemed stuff. So,
yeah, the Bud Light commercial you referenced, I thought that was interesting because I found myself watching it and liking it, but almost in the moment also thinking that it could have been really bad if the chemistry between the man and the woman was was bad. Like if it was just two actors, or if they tried to force some kind of chemistry, or it didn't seem authentic, that could have been a really bad situation. So that kind of strikes to me, or brings home to me, how important just even just the nuance of a commercial is, and not just it's so much in the execution and not just the idea sometimes.
It is very much so. And I was ready to love, I felt like that was based on a universal truth, and I was ready to love Kia's Binky spot, because as a dad, I actually paid like $100 to have Stripey the cat mailed to me from a foreign country.
Oh my gosh.
My daughter left Stripey in the hotel room. So I think that one was based on a universal truth, but they took it too far, and it took away from the authenticity of it in my mind.
Good point.
It was funny, but it just wasn't a top spot, because it didn't ultimately ring that authentic button, the good wins button for me as an agency head.
When, you know, I feel like we've been watching commercials for a long time. I'm 46. I've kind of grown up with a lot of this in my lifetime, but maybe we can talk a little bit about the evolution and history of Super Bowl spots, because obviously things have changed dramatically. A lot of these come out even before the Super Bowl's out. They get leaked or released, on snippets or social media or however it's released. And obviously that was never a thing, 20, 30 years ago. That just wasn't part of the culture. Usually maybe it was promoted to people who might be reviewing it, but not to a general audience ahead of time. How have these evolved over the years whether in terms of importance, whether in terms of stature, whether in terms of how they're even produced, from kind of, then until now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Michael. They said last year 100 million viewings happened by Friday before the Super Bowl. So the extent, the media buy is very expensive, but you get a lot of value ahead of time and behind the time, like us talking about it today. But that's certainly what hasn't always been the case with Super Bowl advertising. A lot of brands would just put their best spot, that had been working during the season, on the end of the game. And I think, there are a lot of brands that have had home runs through the years, through the decades. But I think that original Coke classic Mean Joe Green ad, and I'm dating myself, I'm older than you are, so I remember the Mean Joe Green spot with the "Hey kid, catch." Mean Joe Green tosses him the jersey after slamming the kid's Coke, and that one still gets incredibly high ratings. That storytelling, that story voice, I have a love for storytelling in that way. But I think the one change that I've seen that's very that idea of spreading out your buy and your impact over more time has made ads, I feel like, a little too self-referential and sometimes a little too inside baseball.
Yeah.
Marketing done for marketing people, as opposed to a consumer audience. And I felt like M&M's got caught up in their inside baseball laundry this year, where they had to be up on the news to understand that their M&M spokes characters were perceived as overly woke by right-wing media. They pretended to kill off their characters and bring in Maya Rudolph as a replacement, and then Maya had these odd clam flavored M&Ms. The M&Ms were really back at the end. I mean, they got tons of media coverage, but I think they missed their 30-second opportunity. There's a lot of head scratching, and with my department that didn't know all that media background on it. So that was a miss. But anyway, self-referential, trying to, I think, outstar the other stars. I think if you read research, 25%, having a star in your ad gives you 25% more, connectivity, the next day. And obviously somebody with 200 million or 2 million Twitter followers, tweets out that they're going to be in your ad. It gives you a buzz. But
sure.
I think there's so many stars now, and I guess that DraftKings or the Caddyshack would have been examples of a miss, in my opinion, where the stars don't relate to your brand at all. I felt like the Popcorners actually did a decent job.
I like that one. Yeah.
Breaking Bad. I could all write notes, but it was making a point that their product is like crack, I guess. It was like crystal meth. But all the notes were right in that one. So it worked. But some of them are just stars for the sake of stars.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I have to imagine, like, it's not like one ad or one moment that's going to make or break a brand, but I imagine a win versus a loss, for however we define that in a Super Bowl spot, has got to be worth a lot to a brand, whether it's raw dollars and cents or just recognition, things like that. I mean, do we have a sense of like how much this impacts those who are perceived as being the winners in this case?
Well, yeah, I think some of that is subjective, and I know direct marketing people, the Super Bowl just makes them insane, because they, it's $7 million one time, big punch, home run swing, and they'd rather nibble you to death by incremental amounts. But I do think that, certainly Apple's 1984 with, shot by Ridley Scott, put Apple on the map in a way that it hadn't been. It was head to head with PCs at that point, and it just launched them ahead. E-Trade with their famous baby spot, which I think is one of, all time favorites. I thought their spot was a bit of a miss this year. It just wasn't as sort of off the cuff, casual, entertaining as that original baby that spit up during his
right.
There was a lot of fun there. But I think, from the original, I think Dick Butkus did the first star turn for Presto and Antifreeze, because he filled holes really well. That's way back in like Super Bowl 14 or whatever. But today the star thing is too much, I think, for a lot of brands.
Yeah. A couple more things for Chris Preston. Really enjoying this conversation. Chris, as we think about this year's, maybe even just trends from recent years, are there things aside from, star performances, things like that, are there things that are trends that you see kind of carried through a lot of this year's spots, things that, whether it's distribution, whether it's the ads themselves, that you say, yeah, this is kind of the direction that the creative turns are going, or how these things are being made right now?
Yeah, I think there's a background of content now, it makes me crazy when creative ideas and is called content, because it seems to be a diminishment of it in a lot of years. But a lot of the spots you saw and a lot of the spots you've seen over the last few years have been longer format films that have been cut down to 30. And if you look online at some of them, like the Caddyshack, spot for Michelob, made a lot more sense when you saw the 2 minute version versus them trimming it to 30, where it just felt like you were being sort of shouted at a bunch of random scenes. But I feel like that concept of engagement is really what it's all about now, trying to get people to engage beyond the Super Bowl. And I think, the Coinbase spot last year was an example of that, with just the floating QR code, floated around for 30 seconds, and it broke the internet. They got so many people scanned it because they wanted to know what the heck it was. However, the brand, I can't even remember the brand that did it this year, trying to get you to go to. Do you remember the name of that one?
I don't, and that's a good point, because sometimes an ad is seems like it's successful because you remember it, but what if you don't remember the brand?
Exactly, and that happens way too much. I think even if you do something amazing, if the emotion gets in the way of the message, you can lose as well. That's why the farmer's dog stuck in my head. It's
just
odd name, odd brand. The Amazon spot. I don't know if you were touched by the Amazon dog spot as much.
Yeah,
but it was a disappointment. I mean, I'm sure it was disappointing to both brands that both had as touching dog spot there. But for me, the farmer's dog was much more relevant to what they were selling, and so, and also more emotional, but, and so it worked better.
Chris, final thought. Chris Preston, partner and chief creative officer at Preston Spire. That's a Minneapolis-based ad agency. Really enjoying this conversation. Final thought. I mean, as we think about the future, I guess maybe the past informs the future a lot of times, and especially in, as we think about it in retrospect. But where, how do you imagine these trends kind of evolving or continuing as we go forward? Are these kind of 30-second spots still going to be that important in a kind of increasingly kind of segmented, pocketed kind of, you know, world of advertising? Or how do you see Super Bowl advertising, you know, 5-10 years in the future?
You know, that's a great question, Michael. And I think storytelling has been around for, you know, centuries. I think it's how we learn. I think it's how we remember. I think there'll be a lot more, you know, as technology evolves, as artificial intelligence comes in and can tell exactly what a, you know, makes a person tick and respond. There will be attempts to use AI in I think, you know, very effective ways. I suspect it'll be effective in for a while. But getting back to the storytelling, I think that's still going to be the most relevant, the most interesting, the most entertaining. A little bit of, you know, the turns, the unexpectedness is still the freshness, the zigging when others zag is going to continue to be important. But I do think storytelling will, I think it's going to come back in a bigger way, a trend. Maybe that's wishful thinking on a writer's part.
No, I like to think the same thing, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think the human truths, you know, are still going to be, you know, critical. And I think there'll be a little bit of, you know, pushback against this AI and against the sort of, you know, digital experience for the sake of a digital experience, as opposed to being in the moment, being invited to the party, being a welcome idea. As I said, our agency, Preston Spire, believes in that. And we, you know, having that element as part of your brand voice is very, very important.
Well, absolutely it is. And I like all those things you just said. And we'll see where the future of all this is headed. It's very interesting to think about right now. But, you know, the future never happens suddenly. It usually kind of evolves over time. So maybe we've already experienced some of these things along the way. But Chris, I really enjoyed this conversation, the chance to kind of catch up on what we watched Sunday, you know, outside of the game, and how that kind of matters to brands and where we might be going with that for the future as well. So appreciate the opportunity to chat with you, Chris Preston, and I hope we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Michael. It was great to meet you and to chat with you.